Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very excited to have indie songwriter Rhea Stevens back on the Sounds of Christmas podcast. Hi, Rhea.
Hey, Ken. Great to see you.
It's great to see you, too. You were on a couple of years ago when Tis the Season had, I think it had just come out. And
yes.
I was looking back at that and I had in my notes as we were getting started, always been a songwriter. Dad introduced her to the jazz scene when she was 11. By 2011, she had already written 250 original songs. I thought, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm a songwriter junkie. I just can't quit the habits.
I had introduced you as indie songwriter. Is that the right way you like to be referred to?
Well, it's funny. When I think of indie songwriter, I think of like a really acoustic genre. But I'm an independent artist. I'm not with a label. So yeah, I'm an independent artist and, you know, making a whole lot of music, whether that's Christmas or dance or pop stuff. And yeah, I'm a studio rat. I kind of just do it all.
I like the way that Aaron over at Marianne Bright introduced you. Extraordinary singer and songwriter of many a Christmas song, supporter of the Christmas music community, and fabulous human being.
Aww.
I thought, wow, that's really nice. I can't come close to that, so I'll just steal it and say it.
Aaron is such a, he's such a dear friend. You know, that's been the coolest thing about making all this Christmas music, honestly, is getting to know this Christmas community, the podcasters, the people who listen to this stuff. It has been this unexpected joy that has been really fun.
You know, when I started the Sounds of Christmas online station, I had no idea that there were other Christmas music fanatics like me, but I went ahead and started it. And then I started this podcast a couple years ago and felt like the same thing. Okay, there are people who like Christmas music. Some of them even like it all year long. But is there going to be anybody who cares about a podcast that talks about it? And I have met so many wonderful people like Aaron, people who do podcasts that are focused on different aspects of Christmas and music bloggers. I guess Aaron would consider him. I'm talking about Aaron over at Marianne Bright. I think I had said that.
Aaron but Hinton.
Yeah. I think he would consider himself a music blogger, but many who focus on Christmas music. And it is just a very wonderful and supportive community. And that's terrific.
You know, and what's really cool about it that has really surprised me is that everybody in this community is, they're just not as conservative as I would have thought. Everybody's really open and, which has been very shocking to me, which is really great.
Well, I think one of the things that everybody...
Not to get into politics, but...
Right. Well, even without quite getting into politics, one of the things I think that a lot of people figure out when they do become part of this community is that while everybody in it loves Christmas, they don't all love it in the same way. And there's sometimes a little a back and forth about it, but I think everybody recognizes that just because somebody else celebrates Christmas, likes different kinds of Christmas music than you, whatever, that's okay. There's no particular one way.
Absolutely.
That you have to like Johnny Mathis and Bing Crosby and that's it. You know, there's none of that. There's none of this is how you have to celebrate. This is when you have to start celebrating and this is when you have to stop. There's none of that. And I think once you sort of get used to that and really embrace it, it sort of bleeds into other things. Mm. And maybe you get the idea that there's not just one way to live your life, to love and be loved, to do lots of things, that just because it's not what works for you doesn't mean it's wrong. Yeah. And I think a lot of people sort of figure that out when they become part of this community. And I think that's a great way to lead into your recent single, Love Party.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about? I mean, you're not just a Christmas music artist.
I do make a lot of Christmas music.
Yes, you do.
I'm an artist just first. And yeah, Love Party came about because I lived in Los Angeles for 23 years. In 2022, July of 2022, I moved up to Northern California to live near family again, which has been fabulous. But I spent 23 years living in Los Angeles. And quite honestly, I mean, I worked in so many party bands. I worked with so many different producers, so many different singers. I had all kinds of different neighbors who of every different culture, every different faith, or complete lack thereof, you know, and lived amongst everybody quite peacefully so. And I started doing a lot of session work with Jamie Dunlap, who's the South Park producer. He's done, mm-hmm. oh gosh, I don't even know, probably like 20 something seasons with South Park. And I was just doing a lot of sessions for him, and he was asking me about singers that I knew in town and could I connect him with some different people. And I just started, oh yeah, you know, this person would be great, and they could really use the money right now. This person is off the road. They're in town for a couple of months. And somehow that conversation evolved into the economic divide in the city. And I know that I wasn't always welcome, or there was a certain defensiveness a lot of times being the white singer in the band. And I completely realize that I benefit from white privilege every single day. I completely understand it. But I always felt a little bit, not always, but a lot of times I felt like, oh my gosh, this is just so hard to explain. So I did not grow up with money. I did not, you know, my dad is a Ukrainian immigrant. We did not have money growing up. I was not born with a silver spoon, but it does not matter because I am still white and I still experience white privilege on a daily basis. And I understand how freaking unfair that is, that I should have that advantage. And so Jamie and I went deep into all of this while we were talking about who to hire for what. And I just loved calling up my colleagues and referring them for gigs. And somewhere in that span of the conversation that Jamie and I had, he sent me a track and said, hey, you know, here's a dance track. Is there anything you want to do with this? Can you kind of take a crack at it? And I just thought, well, I'd love to write a song about inclusivity because I feel like there's so much divisiveness, rightfully so, and I get it. But that's what Love Party was born out of. I mean, I've had so many conversations with colleagues who, you know, they have advantages and disadvantages, or they're wondering whether to bite the bullet and get married, even though they don't feel like they're grown up enough to do it yet. Or they don't want to get married, but they feel the pressure to do it because that's what society tells you to do. Or colleagues who just came out and they're feeling ostracized from their families, or I mean, just all kinds of different walks of life. And you see that everywhere in the city, and it's beautiful. So, I mean, I love dance music, but when there's nothing in it that isn't emotional or that has a message, it kind of loses me. So this was a fun opportunity to write a song that was dance, but that was also emotional and had a positive message.
And this will be featured, or maybe it's already been, in a Lifetime movie called Secrets of a Celebrity Nanny.
Yes, that movie is coming out soon. I believe it's coming out this fall. I have three songs in that movie, and
Wow.
this is, and it's a really cool movie. Gosh, I wish I could talk about it, but I don't know if the directors would let me do it. I just got the footage last week, and it looks amazing, and I can't wait to share it. But yes, this song and two other songs are in the movie, and I can't wait for everybody to hear them because it's been such a fun project to work on, and it's been such a blessing. It's kind of a music film. That's something that I can say. I think safely that it's a pop star movie, and the actress is lip syncing to these songs, which is really exciting. It's really fun. Really fun to see that.
I know that you had Christmas songs that have been placed in movies. Has Love Party, is it on its way to others, or is, I don't want to make it sound like it's not a big deal, or is this it? I don't want to,
I
because
don't
it's
know.
still a
I mean,
big deal.
the thing is with sync licensing is you just don't know what the directors and the music supervisors are going to choose. I have no idea the fate of any of my songs. I just make them and I pitch them, and I have an agent who pitches them. I do have an agent who represents Love Party, and so hopefully we'll see some traction on it, and I do hope that the song goes farther. But that is in the hands of the gods and the agents. So we'll see.
It's really interesting how the music industry has, I don't want to say it's a brave new world because this has been going on for a while, but it used to be that you got your song produced and the next step was getting a radio station to play it. And now so many artists are writing songs and getting them, whether they perform them or somebody else performs them, and getting them into TV shows and into movies. I know I have a friend who's so excited when, and he will post on social media, make sure you're watching Grey's Anatomy tonight because, this particular song's in there or whatever. And it's, it's something that would have been undreamed of before, but it's kind of the state of things now, and it's got to feel really neat when that a made for Netflix Christmas movie that will, because it's made for Netflix, it's always on Netflix anytime somebody could watch it, and there's your song.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, I love radio because the people who listen actually listen through it. They're not just hearing a little clip of a song. But for independent artists, it's tough to recoup. So if you're paying out a lot for radio, your chances of recouping are very small. Very, very small. And just making the music, especially if you're hiring musicians and doing the promo, it's very expensive. This is not a cheap venture, that's for sure. I mean, much of my income goes into music and promotion. But the great thing about film and TV and ads is that you get the royalties on the back end, and it plus you get the upfront fees, which helps you to make more music. But yeah, this is not like, I mean, I know a lot of us independent artists really, we look around at people who write books and are successful, or people who paint, and we go, oh my gosh, you chose such a less expensive career path than I did. But we're kind of like the last of the Mohicans, the ones of us that just do this because we're compelled to do it, and we really don't know what else to do. I mean, I spent my entire childhood just chiseling my skill set, and then when I became a young adult and found other people, oddballs in the world, that had done the same thing with their childhoods, and we were kind of on a par artistically. It was fabulous. And then at that point, you're already sold hook, line, and sinker on your career path. You're just gonna make it happen no matter what.
Now, you had mentioned working with Jamie Dunlap on South Park. What I gotta know, what were you doing for South Park? Are there gonna be
Oh,
songs or that you
I
can even
am.
talk about?
Oh yeah. Well, I'm goth girl. It's just so funny because here I am like this. I make this happy Christmas music, but I'm goth girl in the South Park Xbox video game, The Stick of Truth, singing a song called All in Your Head. And the goth kids are beloved. I mean, they're just. So when Jamie called me and said, "Hey, do you want to be Goth Girl and sing this song that I wrote?" Of course, I jumped at the chance. It's just so much fun. So I'm totally rocking out. I'm basically just screaming my head off through the song.
How
And
fun.
it's a really funny spoof. But yeah, as far as how I started doing things for South Park, I was just basically a session singer for Jamie for a long time, doing a lot of different stuff for Hallmark and Lifetime, and he was writing the songs with his partner David Feldstein, and I was just coming in as a vocalist. They were just making, like, gosh, I don't even know, like, five songs a week for this library and that library, and they would just call me up and have me come over and do the vocals for them. And then Jamie called me to be Goth Girl on South Park. And then from there, we started working on our own stuff. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, like, nobody's career looks even remotely the same. I mean, when you're in Los Angeles or New York and you're just knocking around doing your thing, it's like a, I don't know, you just kind of connect the dots into some interesting areas. And your Little Dipper, your Big Dipper looks kind of in an odd shape. And so, yeah, and mine is partly the shape of Goth Girl.
Are you involved with any other video games?
No, not right now. I'd love to be. I mean, it's crazy because I know a lot of producers right now are not hiring singers, they're just using AI voices. Which is really frightening.
Yeah.
That's another subject, but we'll see. I may have some interesting stuff come up here soon. I'll let you know.
Okay. I want to circle back to Love Party because I feel like we sort of blew through it and then got to Goth Girl. But you have a really cool lyric video for this song on your YouTube channel.
Oh, thank you.
And if I read things correctly, you're the one, you produced this, you put it all together.
I did. Yes, I've been making videos, lyric videos, and editing videos for years. And in the past, I've hired lyric video artists to do lyric videos, to make lyric videos to my stuff. But I find myself going back and forth with them so much that, quite honestly, it takes just as much time for me to do it myself as it does to hire somebody else to do it, because I'm pretty, I think I see in my head how I want the whole thing to look. Like with Love Party, I put a lot of different filters on the footage to make it look kind of gritty. And the time that it takes to explain what the changes are that you want to make to somebody else's work, it's just easier to do it yourself. So yeah, I did this one myself, and thank you. I think it turned out really cool too. I actually really enjoy watching it.
For anybody who hasn't seen it, and I'll put the link to the video, and I'm going to put a whole bunch of links for you in the show notes. But can you sort of describe what happens in this video? Because it's not, because there are some lyric videos where it's just some kind of cool shifting backgrounds and animated words. And Love Party is a lot more than that.
Yeah, well, I pulled footage of people from all different races, all different cultures, and all different kind of like dance floor scenarios. I mean, there's kids from the ghetto in it. There's kind of everybody is in it. And there's the trans community. I love when the trans people come in towards the end. They're so beautiful. They're so beautiful. And it's just a big rainbow of everybody celebrating who they are and celebrating the moment, whether that's on the dance floor or out in the street or wherever they are. But the lyric, from the ghetto to the west side, bring the love tonight. That really comes from my experience of living in Los Angeles. And wouldn't it be amazing if we could all get together and I just think that music is like medicine, it's healing. And when you get together and you're all enjoying something together, it's like when people say, the people who play together stay together. That's kind of the concept behind Love Party is let's play together. Let's just play and let everybody shine. Everybody's got a place on this dance floor. There is no hierarchy here whatsoever. So that's how the lyric video is. It's just gives everybody a chance to shine. I don't think I left anything out. I don't think I left anybody out. I could not find footage of some things that I wanted to put in, but I think it's very colorful, a lot of fun, and I think it celebrates everybody.
When the single was released, it was released at the end of June, and you had said it was sort of in celebration of Juneteenth and also of Pride Month. And I don't want to slight either of those, but I feel like it's so much bigger because it's inclusive for everybody and everything and everyone. And it's not that Juneteenth isn't important, and it's not that Pride isn't important, because both of those things are. But I think it includes that, and includes it just everything. It's a little bit like what I was saying about the Christmas music community, that everybody sort of figures out that even though you do things differently than I do, that's okay. And
Exactly.
it just it's just I think it's so ambitious and so big. And I hope that people get it. I hope that it doesn't get, dismissed as anything less than that, because it
That's
shouldn't.
really cool. I hope not either. I mean, I did, kind of get some counsel on when to release it, and I was told, it doesn't matter when you release it. You can just release it anytime and it'll just be what it is. But really, what happens with me is as I start creating things and as I start, the imagery starts coming together. I mean, really, during the lyric videos, I was doing it. I was just going, oh, I need to find this. I need to find that. This is what I need to use. And this is how it needs to look. And then I went, you know what? This needs to be released in June because I'm representing the trans community. I'm representing people of all different cultures, and this is really the perfect time. So sometimes I listen to counsel and sometimes I don't, but I just felt like June was a good time.
I think,
And
and
then
I'm sure that there are going to be some people who say, well, you're not involved in Pride, and you're not
Exactly.
involved in Juneteenth. Why are you butting into it? And I just feel like, I have friends and family in both camps, and I feel like
Think
they
we all
need
do.
allies now more than ever.
Well, exactly. And I think most people who say, why butt into that? Why blah 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 blah? I think it's because they don't feel the need to be an ally.
Yeah.
And that's okay that they feel that way, but I don't feel that way. And I mean, gosh, I remember growing up. I think there was one kid that I grew up with from, I think, the fourth, fifth, sixth. I think we were in the same class for like 3 years in a row. And he was very feminine and so beautiful. And he was such a thoughtful kid. And everybody teased him for being gay. And it was heartbreaking. And I would look at him and I would think, you're the one kid in this classroom that I feel like I can talk to when I'm having a bad day. Why do you deserve this? Why does it matter? That boy was ridiculed up and down. And I felt like he needed an ally, and I didn't even know how to be one for him. You know, those memories stay with you. I had a gym teacher in the first grade. My parents, for 1 year, they sent my sister and I to a private school, and my gym teacher was like flaming gay and so fabulous. And he would teach us aerobics, and all of us kids would be like dancing and twirling around and having the best time. And he was so kind, he was so lovely. And he was ridiculed. All the kids talked about him on the, he's this way, and isn't that weird? And it just always was sad to hear those things. So there's something in me that just finds that just unacceptable. It's just unacceptable.
And I know a lot of people will use, and the it's not really an argument, but they'll say, "I don't get it. I don't get it.
They don't
I don't
have to get it.
understand."
All they have to do
And
is,
you don't have to. You know what? You don't have to get it. Why does it matter? It's not about you. Doesn't matter if if this is about somebody who is close to you, whether it's a relative or a friend or somebody you work with, and it matters to them, that's it's not about you. You don't have to get it. You just
I
have some
know.
empathy.
Have some empathy. That's really the bottom line. And everybody's welcome here. I mean, I think about it too. Like, okay, so if you're gonna plant a garden, are you gonna have everything be one flower? I mean, is that gonna be a very exciting garden? What makes it so beautiful is all of the different colors. I love having a diverse array of friends. It's wonderful.
I want to sort of shift gears because I've been dying to talk to you about Christmas music. I mean, that's certainly how you got on my radar first when Celebrate came out or was coming out. And now you have told me that there's something on the way.
There is. Yes, I have a brand new Christmas album coming out, and I won't reveal the title of it yet, but it's pretty much ready to go. All the music is done. And I'm thinking that I'll release it in, well, I haven't decided if I'm going to release the whole thing in late October or in November. I might release a couple singles and then release the album in November. I'm not sure, but I feel like if you wait too long, like too far into late November, you kind of miss the boat. Because I know for me, my Christmas stuff that I listen to around the holidays, that comes out in October. As soon as the first chilly wind of the season comes in, I'm putting on Christmas stuff. Are you that way?
I do peaks and valleys all year long. Part of it is just because of the nature of running and year-round online Christmas music station, but my ear is always to the ground listening to find out what's coming or who's talking about things because there are always lots of rumors, but I always, I want to know, and then I'm really excited about it, and I don't want to wish the year away, but I want that new music and I want it now.
Well, I will get it to you.
Yay. You know, I hope this doesn't sound like that I'm just ranting about lots of different people, but when new Christmas music comes out, the end of September, early October is when it starts, there are always people who are like, oh, you're cramming the holiday down my throat. Why are you doing this? It's not even Halloween. And this is not something new. Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley released their Christmas albums early in October. And that was 70 years ago.
Yeah.
65, maybe. So this is nothing new. But the thing is, just as a matter of practicality, if you're going to release this and you want people to hear about it, you want it, you know, in the old days, you wanted your records or your tapes or your CDs or whatever. You wanted to be able to get them into the stores. You wanted to be able to get it to radio so that they would have it. So yeah, it has to be ready in September, October, because if you wait,
it's too late.
Yeah, it's too late. And to a degree, that's true just for people who like to listen to Christmas music just between Thanksgiving and Christmas. If it's not ready and out there for them, they're not going to find it. And yeah, it's just, you know, and if you only like to listen to Christmas music between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day, well, if that's the case, you're probably not listening to this podcast. But if that's what you do, that's, you know what, that's fine. You do you and enjoy it. But if I like to be out there on September 20th before the first actual day of fall and get one of those first Christmas CDs, how does that impact your holiday celebration at all? It doesn't, not a bit. But it brings me joy. So be happy for me.
We need all the joy we can get. I'm a firm believer that if you are doing something joyful every day, you are making the world a better place.
You know, a million years ago, I used to work at a big box bookstore that doesn't exist anymore. But I worked in the shipping and receiving department, and we would get in July box after box after box of great big beautiful Christmas books, decorating and cookbooks and all kinds of things. And we would keep them in the back, stacking up these boxes for as long as we could. But people used to start coming in by the end of July, coming into the store and asking for them.
Wow.
And then, and this was 30 years ago. And at that point, you have the choice. Do I bring these out and sell them? Or do I send these people away and they go find them somewhere else?
Yeah.
So you bring them out. And then when you do that, then people are like, oh my God, they've got their Christmas books out already.
You're not going to please everybody. That's just...
No, no. But it, you know, Christmas stuff, it's the one thing that makes people so polarized about it happening too soon, because anything else, you go to any big store a few days before New Year's, but after Christmas, and Valentine's stuff is in there already.
Yeah.
The Christmas stuff is gone. They're putting in all the red hearts. Nobody says anything. Nobody's upset. Nobody cares. Easter stuff by the second week in January, it's in the stores already, but nobody's upset. Red, white, and blue for July, the 4th of July, is in there by March. Nobody's upset. Nobody cares. You put that Christmas stuff in there. Oh my God, the Christmas stuff is in the store already.
You make a really strong point. I know, you know, there have been a few fantastic arrangers that I've known over the years that I really wanted to hire to do Christmas stuff, you know, with, and there's no amount of money that I could pay them to do Christmas. They just, you know, and when it really came down to it, when I asked them what their beef with Christmas was, it was because their childhood Christmases were lonely. And Christmas was a difficult time for them because everybody was celebrating and with their loved ones, and their, you know, their families were not in the spirit. And so every year when Christmas comes around, they just can't wait for it to be over. And I do wonder if the population that really hates seeing the Christmas stuff come out early is just, maybe there's some memory attached to the season, you know, a feeling of dread that comes up for them.
Could be. I had, I can't remember his name now. And I also can't remember if he was a psychiatrist or psychologist, but I had somebody, a professional on last year talking about this and how Christmas music is at the same time the most loved and most hated kind of music that there is. And why is it? And that was one of the things he said, that people, some people have a very bad experience, whether it was childhood or whether it was later on in their life, that is connected to that holiday. Mm-hmm. And anything that is tangent to that is something that they don't like.
I've thought about, gosh, what would it be like to make a Christmas album that really went there, lyrically went to the heart of that issue. But I think that I think somebody mentioned to me, somebody I really respect who made one Christmas album, and he just didn't really promote it very much. And I asked why, and he said, every year I just can't wait for Christmas to be over. It's just a big distraction from the rest of life for me, and I just don't enjoy it. And I thought, wow, it's the one time of year that I just, woohoo!
Yeah.
Like, for me, it's like, I love the opportunity to pull my nose off the grindstone and just enjoy the simple things. I like, you know, fun and frolic. I mean, to me, there's not a whole lot that, you know, fun and frolic and like really funny belly laughs with friends over the holidays. There's not a whole lot that some consecutive, you know, nights or days like that can't alleviate. It goes such a long way. But I make an effort over the holidays to really make it special. And part of that, part of the fun of Christmas is all of the anticipation. And I just think, gosh, if there's like a trauma attached to Christmas and the whole world is celebrating, yeah, and you're dreading it, that has got to be the most isolating feeling.
Yeah,
sure, that's a really interesting subject. It'd be really interesting to get people on your podcast to discuss what it is that that makes them dread Christmas.
Well, I know one of the things, and this may sound silly because this isn't like a big traumatic thing, but one of the things is Christmas music, because traditional radio sticks to like the same 100 songs over and over and over. And you go to the mall and it's a lot of the same songs over and over and over. And if you are working in retail and you're hearing that same Christmas tape over and over and over, I get that why you're ready. You're ready on the Saturday after Thanksgiving to be done. Please save me, somebody. I do get that. One of the reasons that I do the Sounds of Christmas is that I offer up so much music that you're not hearing the same thing.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
And I don't expect that everybody is going to just tune in and listen nonstop through all 6, 7, 8 weeks of the holiday season. But whenever you need that, because there's just something about Christmas music that has that little bit of magic in it. Not all of it, but some of it. And when you need that, I hope that you go and you listen to The Sounds of Christmas and you hear a new Christmas song from Rhea Stevens.
And thank you.
And it puts a little, you know, it makes your load a little lighter.
Those are the key words right there. Yeah. I mean, and that is what is so wonderful about music in general. I mean, especially when you're listening to encouraging stuff or, you know, uplifting stuff, is it changes the space.
Yeah.
It changes your space. I mean, and really, I mean, you were talking about the same 100 songs. I really creatively am just trying to like add to the whole Christmas conversation, because I feel like we do get the same 100 songs every year. And I just wanted to write some new ones that people might love. I mean, gosh, if I wrote 100 Christmas songs in my lifetime, that's a life well lived.
Yeah.
I remember the first time that I heard Jingle Bells, and I think like most kids, I was like, this is the best song ever made, or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah.
Because there's songs on the radio and you'd kind of like, oh, I like this song and whatever, but you couldn't really, when you were little, relate to the romantic relationships or the adult situations that artists were singing about. But Christmas? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. You know, reindeer and magic, and that is the world of a child. It's so much fun.
Yeah. And when you're a kid and you're discovering it,
yeah,
there's so much. Oh my gosh, yeah. There's Rudolph. Oh, there's Frosty. And the
Frosty!
You know, and just song after song after song that you get. And then there's somebody else singing Rudolph, and it's a little bit different, but you know that song. That's so neat. There's another one.
And Up on the Housetop. Oh my gosh. First time I heard, yeah, Up on the Housetop is, I mean, all those little staccato click, 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 da, da, mm-hmm, da, 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 da. You know, yeah, it's so much fun. I'm so grateful to have had wonderful Christmases as a child. I mean, I had Christmases where I got in trouble, mm-hmm, for sure. But, you know, your parents are pretty forgiving of their kids at Christmas time.
Yeah. Most are. Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you get older, I guess not for everybody. I know for me, the memories of anything bad that happened at Christmas time sort of dissipate. And most of what I remember are the good times, because I had a lot of good ones. And
yeah,
I guess I'm lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they become funny memories. I mean, I remember, yeah, I think I was like 9, and I decided that I was going to surprise my family and make Christmas cookies. And I don't know how I did it, but I got batter all over the ceiling. Like, it was everywhere. It was all over the ceiling. And I mean, we had had like a brood of family coming over a couple of hours later, and my mother had like scrubbed the house clean and put out all the cloth napkins and all of that and dressed up the table, and I had just destroyed the kitchen. And I remember her getting really angry at me. She had just like reached her. She had had enough. But now that's the joke. I mean, every year when I make the sweet potato pies and the cookies and, you know, we're all together, I love doing the baking. She's like, don't get any batter on the ceiling. I'll never live that down.
You know, it's great when that can become something funny. When I was 6 or 7 and Christmas was still really a new thing, my parents told me to write a letter to Santa and ask him for whatever it was I wanted for Christmas. And I didn't understand. And they told me, whatever it is you want, anything you want, write to Santa. So I took that literally and I made a huge list. I mean, I was a little kid and I got, you know, anything you want. And I don't think that at the time I was expecting a giant, all of these gifts, But yeah. it was like a challenge. Whatever it is you want. Well, let me think. What is it that I want? What is everything that I want? And
a unicorn.
So yeah. This to this day, everybody says, "Oh God!" And it's like Ken's Christmas list. And I thought, you know, it used to really bug me. I was like, you know, it was one December, and I was 6 or 7 years old. But and now it's funny and I laugh about it. But at the you know,
that's a really cute years ago, story though.
But a cute story. 20 years ago it still bugged me when somebody would say, "Oh, you know, when I have kids of my own, they're like, "Oh, you teaching them how to write that big list?"
Oh, no.
Ha, 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 very funny. But,
oh,
but
my
now
gosh.
now it's funny again.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that I get picked on so much with the messy thing because, I mean, I have a sister who is the most organized individual you will ever find in your life. I mean, it's truly a gift. I mean, to the point where I remember being, she's so clean, she's so tidy. And we were visiting friends one summer up in Santa Rosa, and we were driving, and it's real, you know, those roads up there are really, really windy. And I'm sitting there, you know, listening to music, and here's my sister kind of like rocking back and forth. And she just really fast turns around and grabs a sandwich out of the cooler behind us, opens up the bag, takes the sandwich out, and just pukes into the bag, the sandwich bag, and zips it up. Ooh. And says to the mom who's driving us, "I threw up," like holding the bag. So I'm the one who would have puked all over the back seat and not even thought about it. She, like, her considerate, she would never get batter on the ceiling ever. I mean, and she's older than me. So when I came along and my world, just like everywhere I went, it's like, there are so many crumbs in your chair. There are so many, like everywhere you go, it's like, we can find you by following your mess. And we kind of get branded that way.
Yeah.
It's hard because then, you know, you're fully adulted. And yes, I have learned to be more organized and all of those things. And I would not get batter on the ceiling, you know, but I might forget to put the top on the blender. Like, that's something that would still happen to me. And everybody in the family just knows it. But yeah, you kind of have to laugh at yourself after a while. But yeah, it's a sensitive kid thing because you were told that when you were little, and it probably hurts you because you're like, well, you told me to write down anything I wanted. And I was just following instructions.
Yeah.
I didn't. You got betrayed.
Yeah. I didn't. Yeah. What's the big deal? I didn't, you know, it's not, and it wasn't like Christmas morning that I would see the presents and go, is that it? Because I had,
right. You know,
I had a few pages. Is the other truck coming? Where's the rest? I wasn't like that. You know, one other thing that I think feeds into people being stressed out and not really fans of Christmas is the idea that you have to have, that has to be perfect.
Right.
That,
well, part of the fun of Christmas is all the folly, all of the things that go wrong.
Yeah. I think that we get so used to having everything on a schedule.
Yeah.
And having our lists. I mean, I'm a Virgo. I have lists of lists. But that, you know, you go out and you get the tree the day after Thanksgiving and it sits out back. So the branches drop and then you put it in on Saturday and you decorate it on Sunday. And then is the next step, and then is the next step. And then you get, you know, to the end of the first week of December and you're already behind and you feel like you're ruining Christmas. And, you know,
let it
be fun. It's like, yeah.
Well, yeah, because you're not present anymore when you're worried about how you're, I mean, it's like that for me, like when I'm recording a vocal, if I'm singing and I'm thinking, oh, that sounded horrible, you shouldn't have done it that way. And then all of a sudden I'm no longer in the song. I'm in my
Yeah.
head. So like you miss Christmas when you're stressing about it.
Yeah, I like to, and this used to drive everybody nuts. I like to go out Christmas shopping on the 23rd or 24th and just, and be out in it, and it feels Christmassy. And I don't need, I like to just be able to think what is something that would make my wife happy and try and find that. And, but not make it such a manic kind of thing. And the other thing is, after having, once my kids became teenagers and they had any money ever, I never wanted to buy anything too far in advance because they might get it for themselves. New Gwen Stefani CD came out. Oh, that would be so great in the stocking. Oh, she already got it. Okay. All right. So yeah, but if you just, make your plan if you must of the things that you want to try and accomplish, but don't feel like you have to do it all because Christmas is coming again next year.
I remember the first time I was like madly in love. I was 17 and I just went, I bought so many things for my boyfriend and like so much stuff that I knew he'd love. But he looked at me and he said, you know, just us being together is so special. Just to be able to spend Christmas together is amazing. And I just feel guilty because I know, you know, I've been going through stuff, but like none of these presents that you give me are going to make life perfect. But us being together is perfect right now the way that it is. And you spent so much money on me, and I just hope it's not hurting you that you did that. And I really learned a lesson. It was really sweet. And I realized, yeah, you know, you're it's too much pressure. I think I put the pressure on myself. Oh, if I, you know, if I really go all out, this person will be happy forever. And it's just not the case. It's just not the case.
I was in a relationship where I would get a list, her Christmas list, and it was very specific. Shoe sizes, style numbers, colors, everything. And it was no fun. I could go, okay, I got this and I got this. And it's like I just bought, I got a head of lettuce and I got a pound of bacon and I got some bread. And this isn't any fun at all. I like to be able to go and figure out, and see something and go, you know what? She doesn't need that. She probably doesn't even know it exists, so she doesn't want that. But I bet it would make her happy.
It's the creativity.
That's,
I mean,
yeah.
that's the beauty. That's so what Christmas is to me. I look forward to the creativity. I love the creative side, the decor. I mean, I love wrapping the stuff. I know people who hate wrapping presents. I love that part.
I'm not very good at it.
It
So,
doesn't matter.
and what I've learned is that you're right, it doesn't matter. But
Well, it's kind of
I didn't
funny.
know
I
for a
love
long
it
time.
when you get presents from people who don't know how to wrap. It's really endearing. And they hand it to you and you go, "This is great. Let me take a picture of that."
I'm looking to see if my wife is listening. 'Cause she will wrap a present and sometimes the wrapping doesn't quite cover the whole present. There's a little hole. So then she will cut out a little square of the wrapping paper and just tape that over the hole. And it's the cutest thing.
Oh, I do that too
It
sometimes.
is the cutest thing.
Oh.
But if you can have, let yourself have some fun
Oh, yeah.
like that, it doesn't all have to be.
No, it does not.
Doesn't
And it
have to be
shouldn't
so
be.
perfect. And then you can enjoy it and you can enjoy the people who are close to you. And if you don't have anybody who's close to you, you've got social media and, it's not always great, but it is, it's great for being able to reach out to people that you used to know.
Yeah.
And reconnecting and let yourself have fun. And you have new Christmas music to listen to this year, including and as yet to be titled or yet to be announced, the title is album.
To be announced.
Is there anything that you can tell us about the album?
Yes. Well, okay. What's special about this is that it's 10 all new Christmas songs, and they're all original. So nice. No covers. And if you buy the CD, it is a deluxe edition. So it has the brand new album on it, plus updated masters of Tis the Season, the album Ooh. From 2021. So total, it has 21 songs.
Wow.
21 songs on it. And there's, and on the Tis the Season album, there are three covers, Santa Baby, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and there's a public domain song called All Through the Night that's kind of woven in with the holly and the ivy that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
But nice. All the rest are original. So it's quite the compilation. And what was really cool about this new album was I was not really planning on making a new Christmas album. I mean, I had Christmas songs that I was, you know, like a lot of different Christmas ideas that I was chewing on. And it was before I had moved up to Northern California. I think I went and I got a haircut, and my hairdresser said, well, you know, if you're moving up here, you need to get in touch with this great producer. His name is Brian Steckler, and he lives in Granite Bay. He's fantastic. And you should meet him. And I kind of like tucked that away. And then a couple months later, I was on social media and I saw Brian posting on a music forum. And he said, hey, you know, if you guys know of anybody who's looking to make Christmas music, you know, I'd love to do some Christmas music. And I just reached out and said, hey, listen, I live in Los Angeles, but I'm moving up to Northern California soon. Can I take you to coffee and, you know, maybe send you some music? I'll be up there, you know, in a couple months. And he said, well, why don't we start working on something now? And I was like, well, I just released a Christmas album and like, and so, and then I kind of like didn't, I don't know if I responded right away, but later that day, a neighbor said, hey, you know, there's this place, it's called the Dorland Arts Colony. It's in Temecula, which is like known for its beautiful wine country. But she said, they have cottages there with grand pianos and you can go there and you can just like take a writing week. And I thought, yeah, that's perfect. So I came home and I said, look, Brian, I'm going to take a writing week. I've booked myself a cottage at this arts colony with a Steinway grand in the room. And I'm just going to come up with some ideas and let's get to work. And that man is like, I mean, he's like a music machine. I mean, we just got cranking. And once we started, we didn't just do Christmas. I mean, I have practically a whole other everyday album, a non-seasonal album of music that I've made with him as well. So, and he works really fast. So he was really, you know, keeping me on my toes. What are we doing next? What are we doing next? What are we doing next? And we just kept going. And it was so much fun. I mean, our musical instincts are very similar. So this album, this new collection of the 10 songs, I think there's two ballads and there's one kind of like, you know, blues rock. I know the rest of them are all up tempo. It's happy, it's buoyant, it's very Christmassy, and it's I would say effusive. It's a really effusive collection. And I mean, you talk about like making your Christmas list as a kid. Mm-hmm. I actually, there's a song on it that I'm crazy about, and I can't wait to share the lyric video because I had so much fun doing it. and it's called Don't Be Late. And I love it because I picture like this brood of children just like ever so sweetly guilt tripping Santa with like, okay, look, the tree is spectacular. We worked so hard on the tree. We made your favorite cookies. We've made our beds. We're all trying to get along. So don't be late. Oh, and by the way, here's our Christmas list. And it just like rolls out like a scroll, like the train of a wedding dress with we want this, we want this, we want this, we want this, we want this. And it's just it's so charming. And Brian did kind of like a 1940s kind of orchestration to it. And for me, I really love going retro with Christmas because I just don't think that Christmas is as charming with really modern production. And I like to picture generations past and then like picture the new kids coming up in it. Like it's like a Christmas through the ages type of a feel. Like it's been this way forever. Kids will always be excited about it. And oh my gosh, you remember back when you were a kid. And I still feel this way when I see my kids doing this or that. It's just like it's retro fresh, but it's elegant too. It's a very elegant collection. So I'm really excited about this one. And it really, honestly, it was not like a big pressure cooker, and it wasn't a big goal to make this record. It really happened just organically, you know. And had it not been for Brian just going, okay, well, what do you want to do now? What do you want to do now? So we did. We just chugging along.
I often ask this kind of thing to artists, and I feel like from what we've already talked about, it's not so out there. Since you write so much,
Yeah.
is there any Christmas music left over that didn't quite make it on this record?
I have so many ideas in my phone of things that I write down or you know, just sit at the piano and sing along with. I mean, yeah, there's ideas that are still tucked in there that I just haven't had time to go back to. But what really is going to happen is when this Christmas album is out and January comes and I'm fresh as a daisy, I'm going to start thinking, okay, well, what haven't I done? I mean, I guess when I think of like Christmas stuff that I haven't done, I mean, I do like the idea of getting into the more melancholy side of Christmas, but I have those songs too. I just don't know what I'll do next Christmas-wise, but I'll keep doing it for sure.
Well, that's good.
The last song that we did for this Christmas album, the one we just finished, is a huge orchestration that Brian did. And I don't think he slept for like 2 weeks working on that. But hearing that stuff back, and it's so big and it's so grand, kind of like the Streisand Christmas album that I love, you know, I think it's just called A Christmas Album. Stuff like that is very compelling to me because nobody is doing it anymore. But the fact that nobody's doing it anymore makes me wonder how much of an audience there really is for it. But I like that kind of stuff because I like having a lush musical experience around the holidays. I mean, one of the funnest things about making Christmas music is that it's so musical. It's just such a musical endeavor. And in normal pop music and even in R&B, you have these simple melodies that just kind of like they don't stray too far. And I don't know, Christmas stuff is just really imaginative, so.
One of the things that I really love about your Christmas music is that, as you talk about doing stuff that not a lot of people or maybe anybody is still doing anymore, is that when I listen to your songs and I mention this from time to time with different artists that when I really like them, that I think about like Christmas in My Heart and Christmas Is Coming Soon on the last album. Are great examples of that because I hear you sing those songs, and I believe I believe that you mean what you're singing. And that to me is a huge thing with Christmas music, because there are so many. I get around 1,000 songs sent to me that come across my desk every year.
Wow.
And some of them are terrific, and some of them are by somebody who made it in their basement and they need to learn some things and work on it. And mm-hmm. and some are by recognizable names, and I'm not going to mention anybody, but recognizable names. And it sounds to me like they had 10 minutes of studio time left and let's knock out Jingle Bell Rock. And I say that often. I'm not picking on Jingle Bell Rock. It's just an easy one. Everybody knows Jingle Bell Rock. But my problem with that is that it sounds like that it was slapped together. And yeah, and it's forgettable, and it doesn't even sound like anybody in particular. You know, if you have been around for any length of time and have your own sound, your Christmas music should sound like you.
Totally agree.
And there are so many who just, you know, well, let's knock this out and get it done and get our Christmas single out there, and then we can say we did it. And
kind of like an afterthought. I don't see Christmas music that way. To me, the Christmas music is very sacred, because I want people to want to get that music out and listen to it every single year, forever and ever and ever and ever. You know, I mean, it's such a permanent, in my mind, it's a permanent, meaningful pursuit. And I mean, of course, I'm a big perfectionist, and there's some times when I go, gosh, I just wish that I would have sung this differently, or I wish that we could have done this or done that. But by and large, I don't sign off on the mix or the final master until I feel like, yeah, this is going to be music to somebody's ears that they're really going to enjoy. But I'm really thinking about the listener. But that's also the frightening thing about putting out Christmas music. If this does get pulled out every year, is it really going to stand? Is it going to stand up? But I'm thinking about how will it stand up? And but again, though, the Christmas music that I listen to and love growing up, it's the stuff that has always had the staying power. So I haven't heard or taken a lot of time to listen to Christmas music that isn't special.
I have a I don't want to mention their name, a good friend of the Sounds of Christmas, who's been working on a new Christmas album, and I think we're going on 2 years now, because it's not quite where they want it to be.
Uh-huh.
And they said to me that they're doing there's this one particular track that they can't get it right. And they said, and I listened to it and I don't believe it. So I gotta get back in there and tinker with it so that it's right. Yeah. And I have a lot of respect for that. I'm not a professional musician. I'm not a songwriter. I'm not a singer. So I don't really know what all goes into the whole process, other than that it's a lot.
And I empathize with your friend.
Yeah.
I have one song on this new record called Welcome One and All. I did the vocal four times. I mean, and we're talking like, you know, doing it, like putting in like everything, spending hours like nitpicking over the comping, and then taking a week away from it and going, okay, I know I just spent like an insane amount of hours on this. I hate it. I'm redoing it. And then redoing it again and taking a different approach, loving it for a week, and then coming back to it a couple of weeks later and hating it and redoing it. And then it just didn't sound sincere because I was thinking about it too much. And then finally, I recorded it with Brian, and he kind of had me change some of the phrasing and stuff. And I was kind of like, after we did it the fourth time, I thought, it's passable, you know. But then I listened to it again, and now I really like it. It's like it found its it found its way, but I couldn't find, I think I heard somebody else singing it. I didn't hear my voice on it necessarily, but I don't know whose voice I was hearing on it. So I was singing it in my style, but this song is like a hymn. It's like a church hymn about inclusivity. It's like a church hymn about the church for everyone. Like, we are all welcome here. All of the travelers, there's no denomination. So at first I was singing it like a preacher woman, which was too much. And then I was singing it like a soft kind of like elegant thing, but that was just like kind of insincere. And then kind of I went plain song, and then that was too blah. And then somewhere by the fourth time, I think I stopped overthinking it and just found a way to do it. But like, it's just like sometimes, and it's a simple song. That's what's so aggravating about it. Like, every other song on this album is so, they're just, this is the simplest one on the album. It's the hardest one to do. But you just get compelled by something, and it's like, you just, it's art. It's art. And honestly, if I didn't love the vocal on it, I wouldn't even put it on the album. So it was worth going back to the drawing board. But sometimes that's just part of the process, and you can't look at it like there's a lot of, I know a lot of producers out there, it's kind of like they treat songs like a mechanic would treat a car. Like, I've already put so and so hours on this, and so I'm not going to invest anymore. It's fine. Get the thing out on the road. And I just have never liked that attitude, because I want to really like what I'm driving. And so it was worth it, but I get it. And sometimes you're like, you open the session, you know, for like the third time you've done it, and you're like, I've got to find some passion in this, but I've done it so many times. But yeah, I get it. And then other times, you know, you get some space from it, and you listen back to what you did, and you don't know why you nitpicked about it so much. But I think you do know, you know, in your heart. I know in my heart when I hear something. I mean, everything from Tis the Season, like, I worked, like, the delicate vocals, like Marry Me for Christmas is probably my favorite song on that album, next to Christmas in My Heart. And those vocals, I am so glad that I spent the time to finesse those the way that I did, because to me, I'll be proud of those forever. I just, there's that part of me as the independent artist, though, that thinks, okay, with the amount of hours that I've spent on this, I sure would love more people to really enjoy this stuff. And the film and TV stuff is great, because it helps you to continue what you're doing, what you love to do. It helps you to continue to do what you love to do. But really, my dream is to have millions of people loving these songs and listening to them year after year.
What's the best way for people to catch up with you, to find you on the internet?
On Instagram or Facebook, usually. I need to like bite the bullet and get on TikTok, and I will do that. And you know, they can always poke around on my website, just reyastevens.com. And Spotify, of course. I'm all over Spotify and on all of the music, the online music outlets.
Love Party is out now. You can stream that everywhere that you listen and download music. And the new Christmas album is on the way. Details coming soon, and you will definitely see and hear about it on this. Well, you'll hear it when the new season of The Sounds of Christmas starts in November, and you will see all about it on our social media, so you'll know where you can pre-order it and you can get the special edition that Raya was talking about. Details coming soon.
Yes.
Raya, thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy talking with you about all of this stuff today.
Likewise, Ken. Thank you so much for having me and for your support and your friendship. I appreciate you.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I told you how to listen to the station, and you're already listening to the podcast, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So you can find us on your favorite streaming site, and then you can subscribe and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, the Sounds of Christmas Station, or the Sounds of Halloween, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.